Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills.
Hi, I'm Bills defensive end Greg Russo, and you're listening to Nate and the Fellas on Circling the Wagons podcast on the Buffalo Rumblings podcast network. Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills. Go Bills!
Welcome to the Circling the Wagons podcast, a podcast discussing the Bills all year round with interviews, news, recaps, and insightful fan discussion. Most times, here's your host and lifelong Bills fan, Nate.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Circling the Wagons, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I am your host, Nate. Thank you guys so much for joining us. We have a tremendous episode for everyone. We have our draft recap episode. I am joined by Buffalo Rumblings staff writer, draft writer, Griff, to talk about the draft that went on this weekend, all the new players the Bills got. We're going to go over overall thoughts. We're going to go, we're going to talk about each player, some of the trades that went on to trade away picks or to get more picks during the draft. We're going to give some grades on the draft. We'll talk about some players and positions maybe we wish the Bills would have taken or not, but it's going to be a fun episode. Always excited to have Griff on. You heard him a couple of weeks ago when we did not only just draft talk in general, but we also did a mock draft together, and Griff just crushed one of the drafts, or one of the picks easily. Which he's gonna, this is gonna be so exciting to talk about because, we got this guy at a better value than what we thought we were gonna get him in the mock draft. So, I'd like to welcome back Griff to, the Circling the Wagons podcast. Griff, how are you doing, man?
Hey, thanks for having me again, Nate. It's always fun to do the recap after trying to project, and it being very difficult trying to project what's going to happen and then actually reacting to what happened.
Yes, everything, all the work that you've been doing since the college season all culminates into one big weekend. Now, when you go into it, is it stressful? Is it fun, or is it a little bit of both? You mean because you're writing all these opinion articles and you're writing your thoughts on like where you think each player is going to fit and stuff like that? I mean, how is it for you going into a draft, especially with eight picks? I mean, it wasn't like the Bills are like the Rams where they trade away all their picks. Like, they had eight picks. They got more picks this draft. I mean, how is the weekend for you as a writer?
I mean, it's always fun. It's unpredictable. And so you just kind of go in with that thought process of whatever they do is fine. And you know, it's your job to judge it. But yeah, in this particular draft, it was like, oh my God, you know, they trade up, they trade down, they get more picks. I didn't project this. And so it's just, you know, a matter of judging it, whether it's, you know, something you wanted actually to happen or not. So I view it as being fun and always kind of like, you know, Christmas for people that are fans of college football and people that are fans of the draft and everything. So it's kind of, this is like the day after Christmas and judging whether the presents I got were like what I actually wanted.
Yeah. If you got like a Super Nintendo, or if you got like, I don't know, like some shirts or something, right? Like
it was like Super Nintendo or tube socks.
Yeah, very cool. I love the Christmas analogy. It's always like, I always equate it to Christmas as well, because this is the time of year where you get like all these new shiny fun toys to play with, and it's just a matter of, you know, if your team can use them properly, if they can develop them properly over the next few years. And yeah, it's a fun time. So let's go right into it. The draft, the Bills had eight picks. Just overall thoughts, overall feelings on the draft. I know Bills Mafia I think they thought that the Bills did a great job. Just looking at a Twitter poll I put up earlier today, I asked the Bills fans, you know, what were your thoughts on the draft? I gave them four grades. I said, where do you grade the Bills draft? A, B+, B, and C+. And most people are saying B plus. We're not going to do grades for me and you just yet because I want to do that for later. But everyone was pretty positive about it. Like 80% of fans were either A or B plus. When you walk away from this draft, you know, writing about and thinking about each player, where do you, where, how happy are you with the players that the Bills picked?
I'm pretty happy, I would say. You know, the team came into the draft not needing that many positions, you know, let's be honest. And so, you know, I think people before the draft were talking about how, you know, they'd be satisfied if they took, you know, a corner and a punter, and the team ended up taking those two things. So, you know, anything beyond those two positions, those two really need positions, is essentially gravy. So, you know, it, you know, people can debate the actual picks, and we'll talk about that later. But, you know, the team had very few needs and seemed to satisfy those needs with, you know, reasonable selections. So, I mean, I don't think you can have too many arguments there.
Yeah, it's amazing. I know we talked about this a few weeks ago, but just how Bean has put this offseason together to have only really two pretty big needs. And then beyond that, it's really just, like you said, it's all gravy on top, because then you're thinking about, well, you know, here's a position that they might need in a year from now. Like it's unheard of, especially when we were younger and Bills fans, when you were just hoping that this first round draft pick could start, or like this fourth rounder, we really need this fourth round linebacker to hit because we don't have any depth. So this is a good time to be a Bills fan. So let's go right into, round number one. The Bills are at pick number 25. They ended up trading up to pick number 23 to get Kaiir Elam. Now, right before 23, the Bills picked the cornerback that you picked in our mock draft in Trent McDuffie out of Washington. The Bills must have seen that, got a little bit scared that somebody was also going to leapfrog them at 25 and pick a corner. What were your thoughts on Kaiir Elam? Obviously, you wanted Trent McDuffie. We mentioned that, but what were your thoughts on the player, and did you like the pick?
Yeah, as soon as the Chiefs traded up to get Trent McDuffie, I think that's when Brandon Bean said to him and got that itchy trigger finger that we were talking about, just like with our in our Buffalo Rumblings chat that we were on, is, you know, as soon as that happened, I think he got a little worried that, you know, clearly you know, Andrew Booth was an option. But he had some injury issues. That's why he ended up dropping to the second round. So that wasn't necessarily, you know, on the Bills board. I think they were maybe a little bit scared off by those injury issues. And so, you know, it perhaps just kind of ended up being Elam as the only first round, you know, corner that the Bills were interested in taking. And so they said to themselves, okay, you know, We got a little spooked by the Chiefs trading up for McDuffie. So let's just, you know, cut our losses and just trade up and make sure we get, you know, an actual starting first round corner, in Kaiir Elam. And, you know, not many people talked about him as an actual, first round pick for the team. And that's kind of unfair. You know, how the draft ended up falling for the Bills, is it wasn't necessarily unexpected. You know, I think we had talked about possibly getting a wide receiver in the first round. I think in our mock draft that you and I did, we ended up getting, who did we end up getting in the first round? We got
Trent McDuffie in the first round.
Yeah, we got McDuffie. That's right. So, I mean, it didn't end up falling that way. And that's totally understandable for a draft perspective. But, you know, talking about Elam, you know, he's, from a logic perspective, exactly what the Bills needed is a, you know, bigger, fast, agile receiver or a cornerback who can kind of has the ability to play press man, played a lot of press man in college. Because that's basically what Florida did 24/7 is just play press man and say, you know, you guys handle your receivers. We're going to take care of everything inside. You know, but has the ability to play zone, you know, has the hips and has the kind of agility to play zone. You know, he has his warts. He's, you know, not necessarily the best tackler. And his press technique, if you, you know, watch the tape is not the smoothest, but in, you know, where the Bills ended up picking, And, you know, how the board ended up falling, he was, you know, considering the injury issues with Andrew Booth, he was the most logical pick at that point. So I think it was very logical for Bean to go there, with the understanding that, you know, Breece Hall, was Breece Hall necessarily an option? I think that was all a lot of smoke. Clearly, you know, Breece Hall would have been maybe a consideration. But you know, the way the board fell, where you had a, you know, logical first round corner in Elam, it was the logical pick. So I think there was not a lot of surprising things about that pick outside of Andrew Booth, you know, having his injury issues, which is something we had talked about before.
Yeah. So, in Bean's presser, and this year I made a point to watch every single presser after day one, two, and three, just to kind of get his perspective, especially because some of the picks I didn't quite understand at the time, and we'll get into more of those picks. This is not one of those picks. This was a very obvious pick, but he did mention, like you said, that this was the last player they had with a first round grade, and they mentioned pre-draft that they had around 20 players with a first round grade. Now, who knows if he's telling us the exact truth? You have to take it. He seems honest and open. I got to be honest. I love Bean's pressers. He's very, as much as he can tell you, it feels like he'll tell you. So him getting scared off from Trent McDuffie at the time, I was like, why are you trading up two places and losing a fourth round pick to get a guy that, like, looking back, like, none of those teams picked a corner. Now they may have picked a corner if they saw, but it was really the fear of somebody, you know, going up ahead and taking Kair Elam away from them when that. So I mean, in my opinion, I like the pick a lot as well, and I was worried about that fourth round pick because the mock draft that you did in the fourth round, we were going to get Matt Areza, the punter out of San Diego State. So I was like, well, there goes Matt Areza. Great job, Bean. You just traded away him. And we'll get into Matt a little bit later.
Well, I mean, let's not get it twisted. I was a little bit frustrated about losing that fourth round pick because there were even, you know, as how the draft played out, there were some good players in the fourth round. You know, they could have taken Isaiah Likely in the fourth round, you know, who I believe they had in for a visit. So let's not get it twisted. It was kind of a shame that they dropped that pick because that could have been someone who, you know, and we can talk about this, you know, towards the end, is there's still needs on this team that they didn't satisfy in the draft. And one of those needs, like interior O-line or, you know, tight end number two or three, where they still don't have any tight ends signed next year. So, you know, trading that fourth round pick was a shame. And you know, that's definitely questionable, but the player they ended up with, I think, is, you know, absolutely reasonable.
I mean, you see Kair Elam from a Bills depth chart perspective, is it goes Tre'Davious White, Kair Elam, Dane Jackson, right? Like it's very unlikely that Dane Jackson starts over Kair Elam in any way, shape, or form, right? I mean, based on what you've seen of Dane Jackson, based on what you think of Kair Elam, like, it would take a lot for Dane Jackson to become the CB2 on this team, right?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty reasonable projection. I do think Dane Jackson does a couple things differently than Elam in terms of his tackling ability that I would point out. And so that's going to be kind of maybe an interesting, you know, training camp observation. And I do think the Bills kind of value that skill because they're in nickel so much, where they need to have the corners, you know, hold that edge and actually tackle runners. You know, think of Dane Jackson's play. I think it was against the Patriots where he tackled the running back. I can't remember what it was, but it was a fourth down. It was a fourth down play, and Dane Jackson tackled the running back after breaking out wide on a particular fourth down play, and had them, you know, turnover on downs. Like, that's exactly what they want the corners to do, is hold that edge. You know, when runners break out wide, and tackle the running back to stop those plays. And it's like, can Elam do that? You know, can Elam make that play? You know, that remains to be seen. But, you know, that's I think where Jackson kind of has the leg up on Elam. But no, I mean, you know, in terms of coverage, in terms of athletic ability, Elam just, you know, is bigger, faster, more agile. Well, as big, I should say. But faster and more agile, I think he has the leg up at training camp.
What's nice is I know we're going to spend a lot of time in the first few picks just because they're so important, I think, to the roster. But Richard Sherman tweeted out, I'm not sure if you saw that. He said basically he really liked the Elam pick. He really liked Kyrie Elam in general. And he says he knows he has weaknesses, but those kinds of weaknesses that he has can be coached out. Like you said, tackling technique and stuff like that. Like they were just, and I think in his press conference call, he might have said that's how they taught him to tackle in Florida or something to that effect, that technique was kind of taught or whatever. It wasn't like, that these are all my capabilities. It was more like, well, you know, this is what I can do more. So, this was just the way that it was done in Florida. So this is exciting. You know, I like Dane Jackson a lot. But like you said, you know, athletic ability and stuff like that. I mean, there's just, you can't teach speed, right? Like there's just certain things that, you know, guys are amazing. Like, I really like Dane Jackson. I like him so much more as like a depth piece. And if something happens piece, as opposed to like, we need him to start from day one, all the time. So this is exciting. I really enjoyed that pick. Like you said, they addressed one of the biggest needs. I wasn't sure that they were. I was convinced that they were just thinking, well, you know, they're set at Tre'Davious White. They'll just let, you know, CB2 be, you know, a third or fourth or fifth round pick or whatever. And we'll just, you know, like they picked, you know, Christian Benford in the sixth round. Like we'll just put him and Dane Jackson and compete with it. So I was very happy that they didn't do that.
Yeah, I think that was one of the bigger themes of the draft of like really addressing their immediate needs is, you know, they specifically, and, you know, we'll talk about some of the other picks later, but the theme of the draft was, you know, addressing players that can play and contribute in the next year and the next season, you know, this coming season, as opposed to relying on drafts like, oh, you know, we're going to replace this guy for the future. And maybe he doesn't play now, but maybe he plays in the future. That thing is their selections were very geared towards, you know, first year impact in most cases.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So now we move to round two, the Bills trade back twice. To get to number 63 overall in round two, they draft running back James Cook out of Georgia. What were your thoughts on the player, and did you like them trading down?
Yeah, I very much like the trade down. You could tell that as opposed to Elam, where he was kind of the only guy, you know, at least from what we've heard, so, sort of the only guy remaining on the board, Cook was more, we have some guys that are kind of equal in talent to him, maybe at different positions, but we're comfortable trading down and picking up some extra picks. You know, at least one of them's going to be left over. And I agree with that because, you know, personally, I didn't have Cook as a second round player. But you know, towards the second to last pick of the second round, yeah, you can kind of sell that. That's reasonable. In terms of his talent, you know, he's going to be, in the best case scenario, he's going to be, you know, James White for this team or Chase Edmonds or, you know, kind of Miles Gaskin for the Dolphins, where like, you know, he's a third down back, but, you know, he's exactly what you want in terms of, you know, third down or the red zone. He, you know, wants to run a wheel route and can basically outrun any linebacker. He can, his route running is good enough where he can juke and run a slant on a safety and be able to beat them. You know, and he's not, you know, he's not exactly just a pass, you know, a pass receiving running back. He can also take the ball on screens or draws or, you know, traditional running plays, maybe on outside zones. So, you know, he's absolutely a weapon for this team, especially a team that passes as much as the Bills do. So, you know, I would urge Bills fans to consider him to be more of a pass catching threat. You know, if Bills fans can remember what James White was for the Patriots and how frustrating that is, watching James White catch passes, you know, catch swing passes out of the, from Tom Brady out of the backfield. Of getting, you know, linebackers matched up with him in man coverage and just running a clear out route by the slot receiver and having James White catch a pass and be like, oh, easy for first down. Oh, there's 8 yards. You know, there's 12 yards because your linebacker is not as fast as our running back and not as able to navigate traffic as our running back is. You know, as frustrating as James White was to play against, I think Cook is, you know, the Bills version of James White. And, you know, is that worth a low second round pick? I would say so. And, you know, does that selection say that Bean, you know, considers him to be, you know, more than just a pass catching back? You know, does he consider him to be a home run threat? Obviously, he has the athletic ability for that. You know, that I think that remains to be seen. That'll be something we track in training camp and track in preseason. But you know, he is going to be a surprisingly valuable piece for the team, I would say, moving forward.
Yeah, I love what you said about just the flexibility of what he can bring on, like you said, I mean, more than just a third down, but especially a third down when you might have Josh Allen in shotgun. Now, what does Josh see? Does he see a position where he can have him go out wide to catch a pass? Or does he want to keep him in the backfield, like run a draw play? Like you said, I feel like the Bills have run almost zero draw plays, you know, the last few seasons. And it's like, this is a perfect time to do that. Of course, they didn't necessarily have the blocking to do it up until the end of last season, but, it's just an easy play that they just seem to have not used. And he looks like he could be a home run threat to do that every time. And I guess when I was thinking running back as a drafted player, you know, you're thinking about Singletary in his last season as a Buffalo Bill. And you're thinking, well, we need a replacement for Singletary. And I don't know if the Bills necessarily look at it that way anymore, as, you know, you need a Singletary guy except faster and better pass catcher. Like, I think they just want pieces, like offensive pieces on the field. Like, you could have a certain guy that, like, Zach Moss might have 4 carries and Devin Singletary might have 12 and 3 receptions. And, you know, like, James Cook could have, you know, 5 rushes and 6 receptions. Like, which is very James White-esque, you know, that sort of, you know, that sort of stat line. But, I mean, I'm more excited about it than I was at the time, especially because the Bills have been trying to get this sort of player for, geez, ever since Dable took over, up until he left, because he brought in TJ Yeldon. That didn't pan out. They brought in Matt Breda. That didn't pan out. They've just been trying to get that guy. And, you know, I'm really excited. Could you see, and this is obviously, we have no idea, this is all pure speculation, Griff, but like, this could be a potential where, you know, Ken Dorsey wants to use more, you know, running back passes, like you said, wheel routes and screen passes and stuff like that, that Dable just kind of neglected for the last few years. I mean, I think I saw as a fan, like, hey, you know, it'd be nice to be able to run these plays. And I'm sure Ken Dorsey waiting in the wings is like, man, if I ever get a chance, like, we're going to just add in a few more wrinkles like that. I mean, I know it's all speculation, but when you're looking at these picks, when you're looking at the James Cook, do you ever get the sense that, like, okay, Ken Dorsey's kind of putting his footprint on this Bills offense now?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, you talk about what's easier in this, what's easier for Josh Allen kind of, and, you know, Cook being a pass catching, you know, running back is the easiest thing, is the most quarterback friendly thing, that you can possibly provide to Josh Allen. You know, what's easier, waiting for, you know, Stephon Diggs or, Gabe Davis to uncover, you know, at the second level or third level of the defense? Or is it just easier to just have, say, to, you know, Isaiah McKenzie or Jameson Crowder or Khalil Shakir, just run a slant route, run coverage over there, run a pick play. And, you know, James Cook, you run a wheel route, you run a, clear out route, and just have Josh Allen toss you the ball on 3rd and 3. Bam. Easy first down, you know, easy touchdown. It just, you know, provides options for the offense. And things, Earhart Perkins offense is all built on option routes. And so that's exactly the type of routes you want Cook to run, is, you know, you're lined up in it's man, you know, you run a motion and you find out that it's man coverage. You run James Cook against any linebacker and have him, choose the route he's going to run against the leverage that the linebacker is, you know, sitting at. In terms of man coverage, I mean, that's an easy first down. That's an easy 10-yard gain. That's an easy 12-yard gain, maybe even more considering, Cook's athletic ability. So yeah, I mean, you know, and being quarterback friendly, I think this is, you know, an example of Dorsey having more weapons to work with and maybe putting his stamp more on the Bills offense in terms of running screens and, you know, types of routes like that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So now we run to round three, pick one or pick number 89. We have Terrell Bernard, linebacker out of Baylor. What were your thoughts when the Bills chose him?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people were seeing that Tremaine Edmonds was going to be on the, you know, his final year of his rookie deal and saying, okay, well, you know, if we're not going to re-sign him, we need to replace him with someone. So, you know, looking at selections like Leo Chanel, who was available at the time. But obviously the Bills went with Bernard, who, you know, really, really fun to watch player. You know, go turn on his Baylor tape, and it's you know, he's a missile for that defense, for the Bears defense there. And so, you know, but when you look at his body type, when you look at his combine, you know, measurables, he is essentially a Matt Milano clone. And I think a lot of people have commented on this of, you know, similar height, similar weight, similar speed. Bernard's a little bit faster in terms of his 40 time. But, you know, strikingly similar players. And obviously, you know, Milano was a fifth round pick. Bernard's a third round pick. But it ended up that the Bills were going this direction in terms of their linebacker, room. And, you know, it's questionable as to why they went this direction. But, you know, when you think about it this way of the Bills didn't have a backup linebacker in Milano's mold. You know, Matakevich, you know, AJ Klein, none of those players could do what Milano did and does. So, you know, it makes a lot of sense for the team, for a player that has been as injured as Milano has been, you know, not massive injuries, but, you know, he's missed games here and there every season. You know, it makes sense for the team to pick up a very similar player so that they don't lose anything, assuming Milano misses time. And as it relates to Edmonds, you know, they have a couple, you know, players, at least, you know, some that we might talk about later that they took later in the draft. But, you know, Edmonds, they have more middle linebacker kind of support. Whereas with their outside linebackers, you know, linebackers that can play Will, that can play Sam, that Milano does, you know, they didn't really have anyone. So it makes a lot of sense for them to take one in the third. Although, you know, what is, as opposed to the other guys that I talked about before is, you know, they address their immediate needs. You know, what is addressing backup linebacker in the third round does seem questionable, you know, even if it is to back up, a very necessary player like Matt Milano, it seemed a little questionable, you know, considering that there were a lot of, at least a decent amount of linebackers that had a similar skill set, you know, in the fourth and fifth round. But, you know, he's certainly an intriguing player and very similar to Matt Milano. So I think, you know, short term, he's the main backup at you know, Sam and Will. And, you know, we'll see how he plays on special teams, which I suspect will be, you know, quite well.
Do you think now this pick, I have to say, was the most head scratching. And this is all based on my own personal opinions. I'm more of a Matt Milano believer than Tremaine Edmonds believer. I love Matt Milano. Matt Milano is the best linebacker, in my opinion, on the Bills team since like Tekeo Spikes, London Fletcher. Like the Bills went through not only a playoff drought, they went through like a linebacker drought, like a linebacker talent drought. It was, I mean, we're talking like Keith Ellison, like that sort of linebacker where you're just like, well, I hope he's okay. And they were just, none of them were ever good. So like Matt Milano was the first guy that came out to me is like, this guy's good. And this guy's noticeable on the field every single week. He always has a few splash plays, and it never seems like he is, I mean, you know, sure, some plays may not go his way, but for the most part, he's just a solid, stout player, on this defense, an unsung hero in my opinion. Especially because they rely on two linebacker sets all the time, so often. I was always under the opinion that if they were going to get a linebacker, it was going to be like a middle linebacker because they're thinking, well, you know, do we want to pay Tremaine Edmonds in 2023? You and I mentioned a lot of these draft picks like are going to be backups. They're just going to be because the Bills had so few needs that this is a perfect example of a backup. I was just thinking that it was going to be a backup for Tremaine Edmonds and in the future replacing him. And now it sounds like maybe it's a possibility that, sure, he's the main backup for Matt Milano. I mean, could you see this being like, okay, well, you want to save some cap space because you're going to have a $40 million cap hit coming from $40-plus million cap hit coming from Josh Allen in the next year? Like, maybe you save some money. If Terrell Bernard is anywhere close to Matt Milano, you can save some cap money. And do you see it that way, or do you see this strictly as we need depth and this was an important position? Matt Milano does a lot. It is an important position. And we just need to be safer there because it's harder to find these guys than like maybe the Tremaine Edmonds and Tyrell Dotsons of the world.
Yeah, I would see it more as a depth option, but based on how high the selection was, you know, in the third round, I could see it as a future, you know, contingency, I guess I would phrase it that way, of Matt Milano. You know, in, let's say in 3 years, you know, Matt Milano is going to be, you know, later in his career and, you know, through his second contract. So maybe what the team does is say, you know, well, we've had Bernard here for a couple of years and he's a good player and we've seen how he plays in the preseason and we're going to go with him. So, you know, I'm not suggesting that, you know, Matt Milano is going to be traded, you know, this offseason, but maybe it's just insurance for, you know, later in you know, a few seasons from now when Matt Milano is approaching, you know, his tail end of his, you know, prime career, where, you know, the team is more comfortable going with Bernard, who is just, you know, approaching his, the end of his rookie deal, the start of his second deal, where, you know, they feel a little bit comfortable replacing Milano with a guy like Bernard and to save some money to, you know, get younger, for something like that. But yeah, no, I think from the Bills' perspective, it's you're trading AJ Klein, who was a backup for, at best, a backup for Edmund, you know, maybe he's like 75% of Edmonds or 75% of Milano. At best, you're trading, you know, an okay backup in AJ Klein for Terrell Bernard, who, you know, we think has a bit of a higher ceiling and maybe even starter potential down the line.
Now, Brandon Bean said that he thinks he might be able to move over to middle linebacker. Now, I mean, Terrell Bernard, like, Tremaine Edmonds is a freak of a size and frame and everything like that. Could you see that? Like, if Tremaine Edmonds goes down right now, I think it'd be Tyrell Dotson, you know, stepping in. Do you think maybe he could make it into, the roster or into the game if Tremaine Edmonds does go down? Or is that like kind of a long shot in your opinion?
I think he could do it in a pinch. It would be a lot. I'd feel a lot better about it if the Bills free agents at defensive tackle were able to prove that they could, you know, take on double teams and actually penetrate and make plays in the backfield. Because, you know, the point is that what the Bills want is to create chaos up front. You know, they want their defensive tackles and defensive ends to create chaos so that their linebackers can, you know, go unblocked and just make the plays. So I'd feel a little bit more comfortable if that was the case and if I knew that was the case. But without knowing that, yeah, I mean, it's questionable whether Bernard can act in that role. You know, I'd be a little bit worried, knowing what I know about past Bills history, that like Matt Milano and Bernard at both at like 220-pound linebackers could actually defend against the run. That's a lot to ask.
Yeah, I imagine, especially with, you know, Bernard being in the middle, like you'd want, with him being so small, like you said, 220 or so, you know, needing to have some clear space to actually make those, like, and he did look good. I mean, the highlights that I was looking, I mean, he shoots, he runs, he does remind me a lot of Matt Milano of shooting gaps and taking down the back, you know, the runner in the backfield, stuff like that. It sounds like he's good in coverage, I believe you said, right? Like he's pretty decent in pass coverage for maybe a running back. I mean, is that maybe how you could see him, making the field, not just as a depth option, not just like break glass in case of an emergency, but like maybe getting and being active on the roster on game day as maybe not like a big nickel or what you would say is like, you know, a bigger version of Taron Johnson, but like maybe if they do run a two tight end set or something like that, the other team does, like you could have him potentially cover one of those tight ends or be out there in case like they think it's a run play. Like it's not just a pure five wide out pass position or pass formation. Like this is like they could potentially run out of this formation. Let's put Bernard on the field. He can cover and also be there for the run.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, say if they're in nickel and you put Bernard there instead of Edmonds, and you know, you want, you know, both Milano and Bernard to drop in some sort of shallow zone. I think Bernard has the vision, you know, kind of and the you know, wherewithal to know what's going on behind him and track routes. I think he could absolutely do that. You know, if you want to get some speed and coverage in those types of like let's say, you know, third and 10, third and 8 situations where if you want to, you know, prevent some just easy dump off passes, kind of actually the pass routes that James Cook would run, you would run Bernard out there with Milano. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. I love the fact that, you know, you use that James White to James Cook comparison. The Bills finally getting that. And now they like have a linebacker that could potentially cover James Cook on the other side, like a guy like that in the NFL. So that's because like you said, I mean, going back to the James White comparison, I mean, James White just, you're right. They just crushed the Bills. Like they would always have a pass catching running back. They would just come out on third down. It would be third and 9. You're like, okay, the Bills got Tom Brady. Just, you know, he would just find a guy that, you know, just a 6 yard dump off pass and he would just find a way to get another, you know, 4 more yards for the first down.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Very cool. So that was third round pick, Terrell Bernard, linebacker out of Baylor. Now we move into the Bills not having a fourth round pick. By the way, you mentioned earlier that you kind of wish that there were a fourth round pick. When you started to see where I believe the Bills traded up with the Ravens, was that in the first round? Is that who they traded up? So when you saw the Ravens pick in the fourth round that they took from the Bills, were you like, man, like this would have been a good pick right about then?
Well, I mean, they ended up picking Jordan Stout, the punter out of Penn State. Mm-hmm. So I think it ended up working out pretty well for the Bills. But, you know, having said that, there were some other players, you know, that went at the top of the fifth or the bottom of the fourth, like Isaiah Likely, like I said, you know, like a you know, tight end or an interior offensive line player that, you know, I thought, well, you know, a fourth round pick would have been pretty sweet. To take one of those guys, you know, just to satisfy, you know, a down the line need for the team. But, you know, with what ended up happening in the fifth round in terms of, you know, the picks we're about to talk about or the pick we're about to talk about, I think it ended up, you know, working pretty well for the team, despite all of that.
So the Bills, we mentioned, you know, they ended up having 4 6-round picks. They had 2 to begin with. They moved down twice in the second round to accumulate 2 more. Then comes the fifth round. The Bills move up from 168 to number 148, and they gave away one of those 6-round picks, one of their later 6-round picks. So to credit to Brandon Bean for not giving up the early one, which we're going to talk about later. But they end up getting wide receiver Khalil Shakir out of Boise State. You know, I, I remember when we did our mock draft, you took a couple of different wide receivers, which I think are of the same mold, if I'm not mistaken, of Khalil Shakir. What did you think about that pick, and did you like it?
Yeah, so we ended up taking Kyle Phillips in the third round, if memory serves. And to be honest, Shakir offers a little bit more than Kyle Phillips does, who we actually ended up selecting. We also selected another wide receiver later in the draft, but that's neither here nor there. Shakir is, you know, he athletically, he offers a lot. So, you know, he can stand out in many different roles. He can be your slot wideout. He's taken, handoffs, from the backfield. He can return punts, which he has a history of doing in college, for Boise. He can, you know, considering what he ran in the 40, he ran a 4.43, which, you know, for comparison's sake is the same time as Sammy Watkins. He can be used as a deep threat. So, you know, to get that in the fifth round, later in the fifth round even is kind of a coup, and it speaks a lot to what the depth at wide receiver was for this class. But essentially the Bills ended up with, you know, probably the best wide receiver that was available at the time. And a wide receiver that offers you, you know, all those different roles. And, you know, I think Shakir himself at best, you know, he's going to be the future replacement, the long-term replacement for Cole Beasley, which is what you want to happen. But, you know, at best, he's going to end up offering something a little bit more than Cole Beasley, you know, offering more as a deep threat, more as like a quote unquote weapon, on offense. And, you know, to get that in the fifth round, I think that was probably the most slam dunk pick in the draft for me.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's great news. I mean, I'd heard something that people were comparing him to like a poor man's Deebo Samuel, to be that kind of player where you could take handoffs, you could, you know, throw. And the fact that he has speed, I mean, you could argue that he might be the speediest wide receiver on this roster right now, which was, you know, they have great wide receivers. The Bills have great wide receivers, but what they were really lacking, I feel like, was just down the field speed. And from all intents and purposes, I mean, it sounds like that's something Khalil Shakir has. Now, you know, path to the roster immediately. We've been talking about the first three picks, how they could see the field, how they could be used potentially from day one. I mean, Khalil Shakir could potentially see the field as a wide receiver, either in the slot or maybe on the outside potentially, or maybe just like a guy that takes a handoff a game or something like that, or a punt returner as well. I mean, where do you see him making, because he won't get the majority of reps. He just won't unless there's an avalanche of injuries, which is a good thing because the Bills are that deep. You know, does he become, the Bills have really kind of lacked a solid punt and kick returner. You know, Isaiah McKenzie has been off and on. Marquez Stevenson has been off and on. I mean, where do you see him, you know, lining up on Sundays if he gets a chance to in his rookie season?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on training camp. And that'll be, you know, one of the more fascinating things for Bills fans to watch during training camp is how they use Shakir, you know, if he can carve out a role for himself as a punt returner. And I think he can, you know, he's not going to be the most dynamic punt returner. But, you know, I think in terms of what Bills fans want, which is, you know, people who can safely catch the ball, you know, not fumble and just, you know, advance the ball, and be somewhat dangerous with the ball in his hands. You know, I think he can do that. In terms of being a receiver, you know, it's tough because Jamison Crowder's there. You know, I think as Crowder, who has, you know, tons of NFL experience, offers a bit more in that area in terms of being, you know, the main slot guy for the team right now. I think Crowder offers a bit more as it stands, but, you know, the hope is that, you know, Shakir can develop into that role and, you know, can be a little bit more of a threat in that role than, you know, either Beasley or Crowder. And obviously, you know, with his athletic talent, that's definitely possible. But, you know, his first year, you know, we'll see how training camp goes. There's a possibility, you know, I could see a scenario where Shakir, beats out Crowder and, you know, the Bills are like, oh, well, this, you know, this, they've shown that they're very much open to rookies taking the initiative and actually beating out their veterans. But, you know, I could see a scenario where that happens. But, you know, do I think Shakir is going to see many snaps during the year outside of special teams? Not really. We'll see how training camp goes. And maybe I'm wrong about that.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. So now we go into the sixth round, the first pick of the sixth round, number 180. You're smiling. I'm smiling because it is, I don't think I've ever been this excited for a sixth round pick. And this was, I mean, we were talking about this on the podcast before we had you on, Griff. We always went over from the end of the first post, you know, season pod where, or the, I'm sorry, post playoffs pod where the Bills lost to the Chiefs. The first week we went over biggest needs and punter was always on the list. And then they never addressed it in the offseason. So, you know, they're addressing defensive tackle, they're addressing all these other positions. And that it kind of ended up being cornerback and punter. And you're like, well, they're not going to take a punter in the second round. That's just stupid. But like, you know, then you start to hear about this Matt Ariza guy out of San Diego State. You know, the guy's just got a cannon for a leg. And he's not just one of those guys that, you know, just shoots a bunch of film on YouTube with just clips like, look, I can, you know, kick it into this bucket 60 yards away. You know, like this guy's, it's from what it sounds like, is pretty legit at what he's done. You had him being mocked in the fourth a couple of weeks ago when we did this mock draft. He ended up being in the sixth. How excited were you that the Bills were able to get him and that he was still there in round six?
Yeah, super excited. So, you know, some mocks had him as high as the third round, which, you know, was a little bit unreasonable, you know, for a punter. But I think most mocks that I saw, you know, had him mocked somewhere in the fourth or fifth round. So to get him at the top of the sixth, you know, the first pick of the sixth round was a little bit of a coup. So, you know, I was super happy about that, obviously, because I had mocked him and projected him for the team. But, you know, he is going to be, I shouldn't say is going to be, but he has a very solid chance of being a weapon for the team and on special teams. You know, obviously he has his huge leg. He averaged, you know, more than 54 yards a punt at one point last season, which is just, you know, insane. And it's not just the big leg. It's not just those distance punts. He has a very quick, like, punting action, that helps him against kind of, rushers that are coming at him. Just like he's very quick to do it. You know, it's like take one step, punt, good, you know, extremely quick. So it's not just the distance. It's that he's quick about it. Having said that, there's a little bit, you know, I think this is maybe why he lasted until the sixth round, is that, you know, he has a little bit of an issue with his punt coverage and his punt, you know, hang time. You know, there's lots of examples of him punting far in college highlights, but, you know, a lot of his film is punting very far, but then having the return it a fair distance. And that's because his punt coverage team wasn't able to get down there, you know, in time because his punts were so quick. And, you know, unless you punt it a certain direction past the returner, you know, at a different angle of the field, there's a chance that he catches it pretty quickly and is able to advance it, a decent amount, you know, a decent distance. So, you know, he's got to work on that. He's going to work some on his hang time. And he's talked about that, during his interviews. But, you know, the fact that that Jordan Stout went in the fourth, which is where the Bills traded their selection to, and we got Ariza in the start of the sixth is a little bit of a coup, definitely.
What about directionally? I mean, you mentioned his hang time could use work. That kind of reminds me of Corey. So a couple of things. That reminds me of Corey Bajorquez, because on any given punt, I mean, he could punt it 20 yards or he could punt it 60 yards, it felt like. But then in doing so, what good does that do if you're out kicking your coverage? It just takes them, instead of a 40-yard punt, they automatically get 20 yards in return time because they have a chance to return so much quicker than your gunners can get down there. And then secondly, the fact that he's got a quick kick is good because that's the exact opposite of Matt Hawk. It feels like he takes a lifetime to actually take the ball and punt it. There was a big sorry, going back to directional, I mean, do you have any thoughts on like his ability to put it in a certain spot as far as like, you know, people always talk like the coffin corner punts and stuff like that, to be able to do that, which is very important to do. We haven't seen it a lot since basically Brian Moorman as Bills fans. Do you think he has the ability to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think he has the ability to learn it, certainly. But, you know, I'd be lying if I didn't say that most of his college punts were just down the middle of the field, or, you know, down, you know, a certain hash of the field. But, you know, I think he definitely has the ability to learn it. Where I think, you know, Bills fans would be interested to learn that he's similar to Brian Moorman is that in coverage, you know, he's not just this punter who's going to be the punter of last resort. Like, one of the things I enjoyed watching about his film is just like, he's going to go down there and hit guys. You know, he's not just this guy who's going to be like, you know, I'm going to wait and see where the, you know, returner goes. He's going to go down there and be like part of the punt coverage unit and like, we'll throw a shoulder and like hit a dude. So, and he's an athlete, you know, is the other thing. Because he has the athletic talent to do that. So, you know, he's kind of like the Tyler Bass or the Josh Allen of punters, where he just has a lot of this raw athletic ability that the Bills need to get, to draw that out of him. And, you know, and part of that too is his holding ability, because he was the kicker also for San Diego State. So he needs to learn a little bit more of the holding ability, which is, you know, something that I'm sure he'll work through in rookie mini camp and training camp and all those offseason events.
I love that you compared him to like having the ability to be an athlete, but also to go down there and throw shoulders. That just reminds me of like a Tyler Bass sort of pick, like a Josh Allen sort of guy. Like these guys don't care what their position is. Like they're going to like Micah Hyde returning punts. Like we were talking about doing punts, like the Bills fans have such a low standard for punts. And it was like, just Micah, just catch it and then just fair catch it. Like that's all we wanted towards the end of the season, but he could return. I mean, he had no qualms about, you know, returning. Like it's such an interesting, like cultural thing that the Bills have done. And not only that, the ability to bring the most out of their players, like getting these raw guys in and coaching them up to a level where, you know, they're actually using all of their raw talent, and focusing in it and molding it. You know, it's interesting what you said about Matt Araiza never having to, because he was also a kicker, a punter, never having to hold for a kick. I mean, barring any unforeseen injury, I mean, Matt Araiza has got to be the punter day one. Like they already restructured Matt Hawk's contract. They took a year off. They're paying him vet minimum. Like he's just a camp body at this point. Like there's no way that they're going to let Matt Araiza, if he's anywhere close to Matt Hawk, or obviously much better as we're hoping, like he is the punter day one, right?
I mean, I hope Matt Hawk is not listening to this podcast. But yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right about that. Is you don't invest a high sixth round pick, which doesn't sound like a lot, but you don't invest a high sixth round pick in a punter to have him, you know, battle for the position in training camp. I think it's pretty safe to project Araiza at least as, you know, the team's main punter for this, you know, this coming season.
So that was one of the more fun picks of the later round. I had to spend at least a few minutes talking with you about that because I can't remember the last time I've been that excited. We feel like we might have even spent more time on Matt Araiza than we did Khalil Shakir, who might eventually be the starting slot receiver for the Buffalo Bills. All right, so let's go through these last picks. Right after that, five picks later in round six, the Bills pick Christian Benford, the cornerback out of Villanova. Thoughts on that pick? I always thought the Bills were going to take at least two corners in this draft just for depth reasons, just because why not take a corner? I mean, if you're late in the draft, who couldn't use an extra corner, especially with the Bills losing Levi Wallace and Tre'Davious White's injury? It just couldn't hurt. What do you think about that pick? Did you like it?
Yeah, exactly. And this is the reason why, you know, we ended up doubling up on corner when we did our mock draft the week before the draft is, you know, White's injury and you know, the fact that Levi Wallace signed with the Steelers. So, you know, going this position and doubling up on corner is not surprising. I'd be lying if I said I watched a ton of Christian Benford tape at Villanova. You know, if I'm watching FCS tape for college football. I'm usually watching North Dakota State or South Dakota State for various reasons because they're very good. But yeah, no, I'm interested to dive into Bedford tape because, you know, everything that I'm reading is that, you know, he's very similar to Dane Jackson in that he, you know, has the size that you want. He doesn't necessarily have the long speed, which is also why it's, I'm wondering if the Bills kind of, you know, either leave him at corner or maybe make him have him do the transition to safety. But yeah, I'm interested to dive into his tape more. Just because, you know, he like I said, he does seem like a kind of a Dane Jackson clone of just being able to, you know, maybe he can't handle the long speed of, you know, actual deep speed receivers. But maybe he can handle, you know, short zones and, you know, more zone coverage or man coverage up to a certain point. As long as he gets his hands on you, that type of thing. So, you know, he's a very intriguing pick for a sixth round pick. And you know, we'll see how he competes with Jackson during training camp, just to see if he can, you know, carve out a role for himself there.
Yeah, I mean, at Brandon Bean's press conference, he said a lot of the same things that you just said as far as, you know, you start him off at corner and then, you know, it's a lot easier to transition from corner to safety than vice versa. So maybe they use him at corner, see how he does, you know, how does he fit in this roster? Maybe he transitions to safety because they definitely didn't draft a pure safety. We'll go over that stuff later, but cool. It's good to, I'm happy that they drafted two corners in this draft. Like you said, in our mock, we kind of had the same feelings on roster construction. You did. You took two. Now we go into the last pick of round six for the Buffalo Bills, and the Bills picked Luke Tenuta, the offensive lineman out of Virginia Tech. What's interesting about this pick is, I did a poll on Twitter, Griff, where I was just kind of curious where Bills fans were. Like, you know, I mentioned earlier, like 80% of fans thought that the Bills draft was a B+ or an A, right? Like, so we all loved it. We all had high thoughts on it. Doesn't mean it's perfect. Like, it's almost impossible for Bean to have a perfect draft. But Terrell Bernard was the most questionable, the most suspect pick of this draft for the Buffalo Bills at 46%. I had James Cook, Terrell Bernard, and Luke Tenuta as the three options. Those were my three options in my head I was running around. Terrell Bernard was at 46%. He was the most suspect pick for Buffalo Bills fans. But second at 35% was offensive tackle Luke Tenuta. And to me, I guess I was thinking, you know, we did this in our draft, or maybe we didn't even get a chance to draft a guard, but I was expecting, okay, come on, round six, round seven, like just pick a guard. Like we just need depth at that position. And instead they pick another offensive tackle, which I thought was kind of odd just because we took two last year in the draft. When you and I talked about that too, they went back to back with Spencer Brown and Tommy Doyle. And they pick another offensive tackle. It doesn't sound like from the Bills PR standpoint that this guy is going to be a guard. He's built like an offensive tackle. What were your thoughts on the pick? I've been talking enough. What were your thoughts on Luke Tenuta? And did you like that pick?
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the sixth round, you're just looking for guys that, you know, it's one step above, you know, a priority free agent or an undrafted free agent. So you're just kind of looking for guys that, you know, have at least some elite traits or, you know, offer something that, you know, is relatively intriguing. And for Tenuta, it's his general size. You know, he's 6'8", you know, he's 6'7", 6'8". So, you know, and that's a quality that other prospects don't necessarily have. You know, does he have the feet to stay a tackle? That kind of remains to be seen, but it's kind of you're taking bets on traits and you're taking bets on, you know, your coaches to be able to teach someone, how to play their position and get the most out of those traits. So as with any late round position, you know, you can see why the Bills, took a chance on Tenuta. Do I think he's going to make the roster? No. Compared to Tommy Doyle, you know, I think Doyle is obviously, he went higher in the draft. He's much more polished, even though he was at Miami of Ohio, whereas Tenuta is at Virginia Tech. And he just offers more upside as an athlete. But, you know, as a practice squad guy, maybe even a potential special teamer contributor, you know, it's something to take a chance on. And he is very, you know, polished from a technique perspective. So, you know, in terms of other, you know, late sixth round picks, it's perfectly reasonable.
So a couple of things, like he doesn't have, right now, it doesn't feel like he has a chance to play guard just because you don't see a whole lot of 6'8" guards. Am I incorrect in saying that?
No, that's correct. You know, not many teams have a 6'5" quarterback. So, you know, it's a little hard to project there, but yeah, no, there's not a lot of tall guards, because you end up losing leverage for various reasons against defensive tackles that stay low.
Gotcha. And like you said, right now, Tommy Doyle, I mean, he's already got a year in the league. He had an amazing athletic score. I'm sure compared to Luke Tenuta. I don't have Luke Tenuta's, pulled up, but I remember, you know, from an RAS score. Do you ever look at those by any chance, Griff, like RAS scores, relative athletic scores for players?
I do. And it's a useful tool. Same thing with, mock draftables, spider charts. And you know, it's just useful, like, amalgamation tool, to use in terms of like athletic score and background on that. You know, just because what you want those things to be is just, you know, a check on what you're seeing on tape of, you know, he's giving up the edge a lot. Oh, does he have a good agility score? Oh, he doesn't. Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense then.
Gotcha. So it sounds like, at least, like you said, practice squad for now. Right now, it's still the offensive tackles, the starting offensive tackles aren't in danger. The swing tackle in Tommy Doyle, not in danger. So every practice squad eligible guy, we'll see another camp body for the Buffalo Bills. Now we go into round 7. Baylen Specter, the linebacker out of Clemson, was drafted with the last pick of the Bills in round 7, number 231. Thoughts on this pick?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, it's kind of the same issue as the other later round picks that we talked about, but you know, Specter's interesting in that he actually, you know, has a decent athletic score. You know, RAS is, as you talked about, he has some athleticism to back it up, and you know, when Dabo Swinney, the head coach at Clemson, was talking about him. He had talked about how Specter was going to be basically a day one starter on special teams. And so that makes me think of, you know, Tyler Medikevich. And, you know, does the Bills staff look at him as, you know, a potential replacement for Medikevich at a, you know, more cost controlled contract? You know, do at best, you know, is he going to compete with, you know, Tyrell Dotson for the main backup role, at middle linebacker? It's possible. You know, what was his role in Clemson? His role at Clemson was mostly, you know, blitz up the middle, beat your running back, and tackle the quarterback. You know, he was, which makes me think of AJ Klein, you know, is the main skill of being able to blitz up the middle, blitz along the side, and then tackle the quarterback. You know, you don't want him necessarily in coverage all the time. So what do? You blitz him. And so, you know, I think that's his upside. You know, special teams is his upside, but he's going to be a really interesting guy to watch, during preseason and during training camp to see if he can be, you know, thanks to that, you know, at least decent athleticism, can he be a little bit more than, you know, just a special team player or just a backup linebacker. So he's going to be the one to watch, that I would say to Bills fans, during preseason and during training camp.
Yeah, that's really interesting. The position where you think he might be able to take over Tyler Medikevich on special teams. I didn't even think about that route. As far as starting, I mean, we were talking about Terrell Bernard being more of a smaller statured linebacker. I mean, where does Baylen Specter fit in that category? Is he more of a smaller statured guy as well, or is he a little bit bigger than a Milano and Bernard sort of linebacker?
No, he's bigger. I think he's more 230, in terms of weight. He's a little bit taller. I think he's 6'1". So he's a little bit bigger. He's a little bit more like a middle linebacker, you know, think like, Leo Chanel, in the draft. You know, obviously not as big as 6'5" Tremaine Edmonds, but yeah, no, he's a little bit bigger. much more effective when he's going forward, you know, much more effective when he's seeing, you know, what's in front of him and tackling and, you know, shifting through traffic and getting the running back in that scenario, you know, in the run game. And obviously much better, you know, blitzing than he is in coverage. So, you know, he projects in the Bills defense, he projects more as, you know, a middle linebacker in the Edmonds role. Obviously a little bit, you know, obviously less athletic than Edmonds.
Of course, exactly. Griff, this has been a ton of fun. You've lended out so much of your time. You've written so many great articles. Appreciate all that you've done, you know, for the podcast and all the insight that you did. This is truly, like I said, I'm not even lying when I say this is one of my favorite conversations. Appreciate you coming on. Where can they find, obviously they can find your work at buffalorumblings.com. He has Griff, you will see it. I believe it's an underscore G, right, Griff? You haven't capitalized it yet, right?
That is true. I don't know why, but yes, it is under case G.
And where can they find you on Twitter? Because you definitely deserve more followers as much as, you know, you talk draft and you're writing about it nonstop and you cover free agency. It's not just, you know, just the draft, but where can they find you on Twitter?
Yes, for God's sakes, I need more Twitter followers. And it's at agriff426.
And yeah, you're always welcome on. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks, Nate. It's always fun.
Thank you for listening to the Circling the Wagons podcast. Download and subscribe to us in your favorite podcast service. Email us at ctwpod@gmail.com. That's Charlie Tango Whiskey Pod @gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at ctwpod. And most importantly, go Bills!
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills.
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills, Nate.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.